I'm very grateful to the President of the United States for inviting me to the United States. I would do it with great pleasure, especially because he invited me to have me over at his ranch. And I'm going to receive him in my own home, not just in Russia, but in my own home.
The interpreted voice of Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking from the Bordeaux Castle in Slovenia. Mr. Putin and U.S. President George W. Bush have just concluded their first summit. Dan Shore joins us. Dan, morning. Yeah. Or afternoon, I should say, isn't it?
Good afternoon, Scott.
I beg your pardon. Listen, judging superficially, these two men seem to go beyond the just polite and correct.
Love at first sight.
Really?
Well,
you,
yes.
You feel that strongly about it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's strong in a sense that I've seen moments like this in history before. Mm-hmm. There was President Eisenhower and Khrushchev and that when the so-called spirit of Camp David in 1959, and then you got Reagan developing a very great fondness for Gorbachev and standing there in Red Square saying that no more evil empire because Gorbachev is so wonderful, and then the old President Bush also with Gorbachev and Clinton with Yeltsin. And so now, but in a much, much greater sense, you have this sense of very deliberate cheeriness, camaraderie, and so on. Notice that there was very little in terms of specific things that divide them, and they kept referring to the different approaches, different points of view, but that they are determined to try to get along well together personally seems very clear.
Yeah, I wonder about something, maybe this is a rhetorical distinction that of which too much should not be made, but it seemed to me that Mr. Bush would refer to their conversations as personal and Mr. Putin as confidential. Is that just a difference between the two cultures?
It's a difference in translation. The word confidential was used wrong. They meant inspiring confidence. They didn't mean confidential in the sense of being secret.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad I asked.
No, I noticed that twice he said this confidential meeting, which threw you right off. I know enough Russian to know, and I've heard that before, it is a meeting with a great deal of confidence.
What did you think of the Slovenian translation? We'll get to that some other time.
Yes.
Is it possible that Mr. Bush's warmest reception on this European trip has been from the president of Russia? I'm speaking just of the foreign heads of state.
That certainly is true. He didn't make out half as well at NATO, nor half as well with the European community when they were discussing the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty up there in Sweden and all of that. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is clear that I think this thing originates, I think, with Putin. They have decided, the Russians have and Putin has, that they cannot go very far in this world given the weakness, given the need for aid of all kinds, mm-hmm. unless they make do with the West. I think they wanted to make peace with the European Union. You can't do that unless you're also making peace with America. This is a great Putin initiative to which our president is so far responding very, very warmly. I don't know what's going to happen when he gets home and has to face some of the Republican conservatives who probably ask me whether he's lost his mind or so on, but for now, this is an unusual moment.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about some things that have been occurring closer to these shorelines. The U.S. Navy bombing exercises off the shores of Puerto Rico on the island called Vieques will end in 2003. Mr. Bush has decided to do that. Does it please anybody involved?
Well, I tell you, this is very interesting that's happened. First of all, the fact that it was announced while the president was on his European trip, you'd expect him to come home to say it here first. And then clearly, they were trying to do two things, walk a tightrope, trying to appease the Puerto Ricans who don't want these exercises going on Vieques, and at the same time, keep the U.S. Armed Forces and the conservatives in Congress happy. So they thought they were straddled by going down the center, with the amazing result that they have managed so far to antagonize both sides. I think that this all comes from a wish to try to build up the Hispanic vote support for this administration. I think it has to do with why they went to Spain to start this trip, why they had the Latin American summit and are talking about a big trade agreement for Latin America. This all is all attributed to political advisor Karl Rove, and it's supposed to be a real effort to get support among the increasing number of Hispanic voters. But I must say, this is staggering the way they mishandled this.
Let me ask about the Middle East this week, because Secretary General Kofi Annan is headed there today, hopes to solidify a ceasefire between Palestinians and Israelis. He's going to be with Yasser Arafat and Ariel Sharon. The head of the CIA, George Tenet, apparently brokered this truce that is holding tentatively. What does it involve? What needs to be done to turn it into something more than a temporary step?
Well, first, let's hear it for the CIA's George Tenet, the spy master who succeeded where some of our best diplomatic talents didn't quite ever succeed. And I'm not sure you ever thought you'd hear nice words about the CIA from me, but there you are.
I'm marking down the date.
There you are, the date and moment. Aside from stopping violence, the agreement calls for the Palestinian Authority to arrest some of the threatening militants, to shut down the arms traffic, the bomb factories. Israel has begun easing the blockade of the Palestinians and pulling back its troops to where they were before the rebellion began. And what's happened now is that they're preparing for the next step outlined in the report of George Mitchell and his commission, which is after the ceasefire, if the ceasefire holds, you get something called confidence-building measures, like a freeze on Jewish settlements, all of this then to lead to the resumption of peace talks.
And in terms of an overhaul, what is inevitably called the comprehensive framework, how do you see that as perhaps being different after this terrible siege of violence?
I don't know. It's very interesting because there was a very great offer made at Camp David in the presence of President Clinton, which Yasser Arafat turned down, saying, if it's reported well, that he wouldn't survive. He'd be killed if he signed that. If that was true, it remains true. And so we have the ceasefire. We may have some confidence-building measures. But I must say, from there on, the view is very obscure to me.
Senate this week passed an education reform bill, but allotted nearly twice as much money as President Bush had initially intended.
That's about $40 billion in the Senate bill. But you know, they're not appropriating money. They're just authorizing it, saying how much money there should be. Mm-hmm. And all of this still has to go through the appropriations process. If it remains $40 billion, I would be surprised.
How is that going to change the experience of America's students, do you think?
Well, they're going to take a lot more reading tests, a lot more math tests. They will not be getting vouchers to go to private schools. This is not really so much aimed at the pupil as it's aimed at trying to reconstruct the schools and make them function better. And so that's what we'll see at first. We're going to see a lot of pressure on many of the schools of America.
Mm-hmm. And is this going to be a pattern for doing business, at least for the foreseeable future, that the Democratic Senate is going to take a proposal of the president's and up the ante?
I'm not sure. And as a matter of fact, the education bill was well on its way towards compromise before we got the big change over with Senator Jeffords changing parties and all of that. So I don't think this counts as part of the big change over with the Democrats. What we're next going to see is the Democrats are going to really put on a fight for a patients' rights bill, mm-hmm. and that there, the fate of that may go quite differently from this one.
Of course, Dan, as the week opened, Timothy McVeigh was executed for his role in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah.
And there's another, by the way, federal execution scheduled for early next week. At the same time, we now understand federal investigators are hoping to accept what amounts to a plea for Robert Hansen, the former FBI man who became a spy. How do you read these?
I think your question suggests the answer, and that is to say that you do not die if you've committed high treason and the government wants to know all about it.
Okay. Dan, thank you very much. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Me too.
Dan Shore.